I knew it was doomed from the start.
That were an amazing time. Beethoven was right, of course. He usually was. May he rest in peace.
And his bumper coming out of Burl, big man...
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Brian Johnston introducing sure the amazing TV. Test Match Crime by Adrian Allington. Dramatised by Peter Thompson, with Tom Wilkinson, Madeline Smith, Trevor Nichols, Nicholas Leprevo, and Bill Patterson.
Oh, yes. He was an amazing man. An amazing test match.
An audacious crime. I'll give you that.
In the 1930s, Adrian Allington wrote a book. He called it The Amazing Test Match Crime, and it was sold as fiction. Of course, both he and the reading public knew it was nothing of the sort. But the laws of libel were, and still are, troublesome creatures, so he was understandably cautious. 50 years have passed since then, and yet it is only now that we can bring you what would be called in the publishing trade the unexpurgated version. The reasons for this will become clear to you as our story unfolds. Some of the principal protagonists involved in this extraordinary story have kindly allowed themselves to be interviewed, and their testimony sheds new light on the startling events that took place that long summer past. Those parts of the story that we feel have been most fully corroborated, we have dramatised. The rest is from source. On one count, alas, we've failed. We were hoping to bring you an interview with perhaps the most extraordinary of the participants in this story, the Professor. We're convinced he's still alive, but sadly, we failed to track him down. Our researcher has been following a path now for 3 years, a path that began in an antiquarian bookshop in Tottenham Court Road, moved on to Victoria Station, involved a decommissioned submarine, a camel train, the Trans-Siberian Railway, a hair-raising encounter with the Ichu tribe of Tanzania, the World Bank, revolutions in 3 separate continents, a hairdresser in Panama, an ice hockey team from the Fiji Islands, the Sultan of Brunei, and finally, a second-hand fishing tackle shop in Rio de Janeiro. There, the trail finally went cold. This is a great pity, since the Professor is the only man still alive who could tell us who his employers were. The 30s in Britain. A war behind and a war ahead. It is perhaps inevitable that our story, amidst all the drama and tragedy that was to come, should be forgotten. But we believe that but for these events, that war might never have happened. And we might not now be what we are. A nation without an empire. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Test Match Crime.
One must set this thing in some sort of context.
Sir Norman Blood, ex-captain of England and son to Sir Timothy Blood.
You see, one must remember that the two nations had just emerged from a most bruising and destructive confrontation. I'm referring to the Bodyline controversy, of course. So this test series was always going to be a delicate affair. Bridges needed to be mended, amity restored, decency re-established.
Nicely put, Norm.
Mr. Lethbridge, ex-captain of Australia.
I'd only played the game once or twice, so it all came as a bit of a surprise.
Joe Prestrick. Joe and his wife Monica, with their 2 sons Jack and Len, still live in the sleepy village of Wattlecombe Deuces, still in the cottage they moved into after their marriage.
We called it Googly Cottage, after one of my best balls. Anyway, where was I?
You were telling him how we met.
Oh, that's right. Now, remember, this was all in the year before the year, you know, the year when all this happened, you see, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnston.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnston.
Oh, don't worry about that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Well, this was a year before. So it were Boggers Parva that we were playing.
I think you should explain who we were, dear.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, we were Wattlecombe Deuces. That's where we came from. That's in Glebeshire. And we were playing Boggers Parva.
Well, you weren't exactly.
No, that's right. I wasn't playing the game. I was just watching, you see.
A spectator.
That's right. And you see, I'd never played the game before.
Only once or twice.
Only once or twice, you see. Anyways, I'm standing there by the boundary.
Near the pavilion?
Near the pavilion. And the club captain comes up to me.
Tom Apps.
Tom Apps, that's right. So, it appears, Mr. Johnson, that Tom Apps, the blacksmith, who's Wattle Conducis's fast bowler, has been hit in he's been hit by a horse, and so he can't play. So this captain comes up to me, and he says, you Joe Prestwick? Yes, I says back.
Ever played cricket before?
Once or twice.
Well, you're playing now. Well, chop, chop, we're in the field.
So there I was on the field.
Braces.
The problem was, I was wearing braces.
Poor old Joe, wearing braces.
That's right.
He'll never be allowed to forget it.
Anyway, the score's 40 for no wicket, and that squire's son's going like the clappers. And the captain comes up to me and says...
Ever bowled before?
Only once or twice.
Well, you're bowling now.
And everybody was laughing in the pavilion.
Because you were wearing braces.
Yeah, but they were soon laughing on the other side of their faces, though, weren't they?
By golly, he's out! That braces chappy has bowled my son.
It was his braces, Peter. They put me off. Damn it, you can't expect a fella to bat against a man in braces.
Rotten shell.
And it weren't long before it were 41 for 5.
When I arrived.
And that's when Monica arrived. Or Miss Monica, as I called you then.
41 for 5? What a wizard spell. I must cycle off to fetch Sir Timothy.
And Sir Timothy arrived just in time to see old Joe take the last Boghurst wicket.
Asma!
My goodness. He's taken all 10 wickets.
But good heavens, girl, the fella's playing in braces.
Does that matter?
Huh? I would rather see the whole village dead at my feet than a man bowling for the team in braces.
Peter was a great believer in things. Fine man, though I am. May he rest in peace.
I mean, no?
Well, I was stumped for a moment, but suddenly I had a brilliant idea. I jumped on my bike and pedalled off. Poor old Joe, though.
Oh, what?
Nobody talked to you.
Oh, that's right. Nobody would talk to me on account of my braces.
Until I came back, peddling away, fit to burst. I jumped off my bike and came towards you. With a cricket belt in my hand.
Oh, with a cricket belt in her hand.
Wear this, please.
Oh, thanks awfully.
Oh, not at all. Wear it, please, for my sake. Good luck in the second innings. One day I know you will play for England.
Wear it, please, for my sake. Miss Monica.
Well, of course, the rest is no doubt recorded in some scorebook somewhere. 10 wickets in the second innings, making all 20 in the match. No mean feat. Still, one must remember that we're talking about club cricket here, not get things out of perspective.
Well, Sir Timothy, isn't he good?
Trousers should be kept in position by invisible means, or failing that, by a scarf bearing the colours of a good club. But the boy is undoubtedly a discovery.
Well, Peter was right, of course. The boy was a discovery. His batting was a little bit... agricultural. One couldn't expect anything else under the circumstances. But his bowling was interesting enough to warrant a place in the Glebeshire County side by the end of that summer.
All 20 wickets, you say? No. Must admit I'd never heard that story before.
Ralph Blessinger, who with his wife Alice now lives a settled and uneventful life in a country south of Spain and north of the Sahara. Daily he greets his neighbours, and none think to ask him what he might once have done for a living.
That previous summer? Well, I think it was the summer of the presidential assassination, wasn't it? Of course, everybody thought he'd died in his sleep. But by the time the Australians docked in Southampton, we were back in Europe.
Yeah, that's right. Norman Blood was captain of Glebeshire. Sir Norman, as he is now. And he was kind enough to pick me for the last few county games of that season, you see, Mr. Johnson. Well, it's the sort of thing schoolboys dream about. But in my case, it weren't a dream. It were the truth. It were like a dream come true. Not that I'd ever dreamed I'd play.
Of course, Norman was strongly favoured to lead the side against the Australians the following year. He was a wonderful cricketer and a wonderful man.
She said that, did she? How is she? Been years since I've seen her. Fine woman. Still live in Googly Cottage, does she? Anyway, enough of that. Where were we? Ah, yes, the arrival of the Australians the next summer. Keenly anticipated, bodyline series and all that. Quite an event, eh, Leth?
Well, we took our cricket seriously, didn't we, Norm?
Listen to them arriving. I remember wondering whether I'd ever get a chance to bowl against them in a test match.
Gazing at the belt.
Yeah, gazing at the belt I'd been given by Miss Monica.
Polishing it.
I'm polishing it. The buckle, that is. I'm writing poems in my head. And listening.
As I stand here amidst this great crowd of enthusiastic humanity, I can see the lights flickering over Southampton docks. It's like fairyland. The fleet is all lit up to welcome to these hallowed shores the mighty Australians, who, within a little month, will launch a new test series. And here comes Lethbridge, captain of Australia and batsman extraordinaire. And following him comes Bumper, vice-captain and fast bowler extraordinaire. Hyperion's curls, the front of Jove himself, though a veritable demon on the field of play. And I'm shuffling my way through this seething mass of mortal coil to put to Lethbridge those questions that I know are hanging on everyone's lips. Mr. Lethbridge, on behalf of the BBC and the world, may I welcome you to these hallowed shores.
Everyone is very fit.
Everyone is very fit. That's absolutely splendid. Now, so tell me, how do you see the test matches going?
May the best team win.
That's right, Skip.
Splendid, splendid. Now, Trent Bridge, it has been said, is an unweeded garden that grows to seed. Does this in any way worry you?
One for all and all for one.
Now, Mr. Bumper, there are players that I have seen play and heard others praise them that highly, but you, Mr. Bumper, oh my goodness, all the lights have gone out. They've put out all the lights. All the fairy lights have departed and left no addresses. It's gone all dark. Well, I never. No sun, no moon. Will you shut up?
Well, yes, of course, I hoped I'd be asked to be captain for the series. But you must remember that cricket's the king of games and the game of kings, and nothing's won until it's not lost. So I never counted my chickens before they hatch. But, yes, I was hopeful.
Your dad was one of the selectors, wasn't he?
I hardly think that has any bearing on the matter.
Oh, yes, yes. I adored the game, all right. No two ways about it. I live for it, still do. But, as the bard says, there's a special providence in the fall of a sparrow.
You could have played, Ralphie.
Shut up, Alice.
Blessinger. Ralph Blessinger. No, can't say I do. Now, wait a minute. Yes, by George, of course.
Am I right in thinking you were Sir Norman Blood's fag at school?
Oh, so you've ferreted that out, have you? Yes, Mr. Johnson. Yes, I was.
My fag. Always burning my toast. Well, well, well. Good God, hadn't thought about him for donkeys. Clever little fella. Good little leggy, too. Hold your horses. Wasn't he expelled or something? That's right. For drinking port in a pub after lights out. Of course, quite a stir at the time. Nice flipper, if memory serves me correctly.
I was discovered in the pub by the French master, Mr. Pablo. I took out my gun and shot him.
It just wasn't done, drinking in pubs. The head had no choice. What do we used to call him? That's right, Ralph the Disappointment. Could have been a useful leggy. What about him, anyway?
The professor called us the bad men.
had a rather sophisticated sense of humour.
You're joking. Blessinger? One of the bad men? No, impossible. Good God. Do you think we drove him to it?
Couldn't help worshipping him, despite the fact that he was unspeakably vicious. It's often the way, isn't it, Alice?
Yes.
Yes, she says.
Well, well, well. One of the bad men, eh? Nice looking boy, too.
That summer.
It was a wonderful summer, wasn't it, old Joe?
Oh, it was, yeah.
Summer and sunshine and falling in love, as the song has it. Of course, Daddy and I went to all the tests.
Well, the first four tests hadn't produced a result, as you probably know. Well, of course, the Old Trafford test was rained off, and the Headingley wicket was a batsman's paradise. You scored a few there, didn't you, Lou?
186 and 227 not out, no?
So the last test at the Oval was awaited with keen anticipation. And remember that it was timeless, timeless test, to be fought to the finish. They'd never tried that before, had they, Lou?
No, no, that's right, no?
A timeless test match. Oh, it was terribly exciting. In fact, it had been a wonderful series altogether. That man, Lethbridge, was a giant of a cricketer. Rather put our Mr. Blood in the shade, didn't he? But I was terribly homesick. Remember that I hadn't been back to England for over 10 years.
After the fourth test, went back to Glebeshire. Stayed with Pater in the manor house. Remember sitting out on the lawn. Glorious summer day. Not the faintest inkling of what was to come.
Willis, we'll have tea under the trees today.
Yes, Timothy.
Oh, and Willis, put out an extra teacup, would you? We may be having a visitor.
Would that be the lovely Miss Monica, young Mr. Norman?
Willis, how many times have I got to tell you that he is not to be addressed as young Mr. Norman? Oh. You are addressing Mr. Norman Blood, captain of England and batsman extraordinaire.
Yes.
I wouldn't say that, Father. No. After all, I've only scored one century all summer, and all four matches have been drawn.
True, true, but don't forget, you scored your century at Lord's, which, as you know, my boy, is the headquarters of the game, as well as the mecca of cricket lovers in all corners of the globe.
Yes, I know, Father.
At Lord's. And by George, my boy, I love every stick and stone, every brick and blade of the old
know,
place.
I know, Father.
It was at Lord's in the gentlemen and players match of 97 that I was batting with Tiddles Marshbanks.
That wouldn't be SPQ Marshbanks, Cambridge and Southshire.
The same, my boy. I was one of the few who were privileged to address him as Tiddles. Oh, well, as I say, we were betting...
Ah, here comes Monica.
Cheerio, you two men things.
Ah, Monica, like a ray of sunshine. You ought to play tennis, are we?
No, why?
Well, you've got your tennis racket in your hand.
Oh, by Jove, so I have. I must have lightly caught it up when leaving the vicarage.
What have you been up to today?
I've been up at Farmer Clutterbuck's, nursing a sick cow.
How good you are. And how unselfish.
I like to bring gladness wherever I go.
Everything and everyone in Wattle Conduces loves our Monica. How is your father, my dear?
Poor dear, he's in disgrace. He's been dreadfully absent-minded again. In giving out the second lesson this morning, he said the epistle to the Australians instead of the Galatians.
Did he, by gad?
Old Simpkins, the verger, has been scolding him dreadfully.
Yeah, well, stupid mistake, but not altogether unnatural. Though, of course, there are wide differences. I mean, the Galatians, for example, were not cricketers. How's the tea interval? Monica, my dear, you must pour for us.
Righty-ho. Hello there, Willis.
Good afternoon, Miss Monica.
Willis, you remember those donkey drops Monica used to bowl?
Indeed I do, young Mr. Norman.
They were always my undoing.
You used to let me get you out.
Oh, indeed he didn't, miss. Your donkey drops caused young Mr. Norman much anguish, many an evening.
That'll be all, thank you, Willis.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Your tea, Norman.
Ah, Monica, you were a picture. Slight as a will-o'-the-wisp. Golden ringlets tumbling down over your fair shoulders, your slim arms softly carving a gentle curve through the panting air. And then, oh, sweet surrender. My castle was captured, my sticks unstuck, my bales unbuttoned, all undone.
Talking of slow bowlers,
What do you think of young Joe Prestwick? Should we pick him for the Oval? anything the matter, my dear?
Whilst young love was burgeoning in the sweet vales of Wattlecombe Deuces, somewhere in a foreign part, two men were waiting.
Dear Mama, so here I am in this dumb burg, waiting with my old buddy Ralphie for the professor, who indeed is deserving of this title on account of his big head and his little body.
Thornoff Carlo, our inveterate letter writer, a man with the most uncharacteristic eye for detail. It's through these letters that we've been able to piece together so much of the story. Thornoff Carlo is still alive and was able to give us persuasive reasons as to why his current identity should be kept secret.
The big shot is late.
He'll come.
Oh, sure he'll come, Ralphie, buddy. The professor sure don't like to mess the bad men around. You know, Ralphie, these foreign burgs sure get a guy down. They have proved a great disappointment to me.
Don't say that word.
Sorry. Gee, I'd sure like to be home now.
I don't want to talk about home. All right.
Sorry, Ralphie.
Don't call me Ralphie.
Say, buddy, do I ever tell you how I put Al Campanoli on the spot?
Several times.
Oh, shucks, that's tough. Do I tell you how I croaked Theodore the Gink?
Yes.
Here comes the big guy. Today, the big guy is disguised as an engine driver, which is a very good disguise, since if you didn't know who he was, you'd never know it was him.
My dear sirs, this is indeed a surprise.
Hiya, boss.
You fool. Have I not told you that we are to meet always the strangers?
Oh, boss, there ain't no G-men around in this dumb burg.
It is better, my dear Carlo, to be a bad man than a dead man. And now, my friends, we speak of business. You know why we are here?
Sure, we're going to muscle in on this ball game racket.
You are, as usual, inaccurate. In England, which is to be the scene of our operations, these contests are spoken of not as the ball game, but as matches of crickets.
Oh, dear.
The operations upon which we are about to embark are, I think I may say, of a more far-reaching character than anything we have yet attempted. They have as their object no less than a blow at the heart of that great empire, which our friend Ralph here has so hugely disappointed.
No, please.
Who our employers are must remain a secret even from you, my friends. Let it suffice to say that international interests of the first importance are involved. In consulting me, these gentlemen have shown wisdom of a high order.
You sure loathe and despise yourself, boss.
I trust I have a tolerably just appreciation of my own remarkable powers.
Inevitably, a man of the professor's stature generates endless rumors. We would like to put on record what is firmly established as fact. We know he was born of humble peasant stock. His first utterance was square root. He was 6 weeks old at the time. We have film of him leaving Einstein's house. He said of that encounter, "The man is shallow. He should stick to the violin." By the age of 20, he had written his masterpiece, The Essence of the Absolute. Wittgenstein writes of it as a work of unparalleled genius. Unfortunately, general opinion did not concur. It was regarded by most as unintelligible. This rejection of his masterpiece was obviously wounding. Like Moriarty before him, he became an enemy of society. And now he was about to essay his most ambitious project.
The complete disruption of the British Empire. A task which, as you can imagine, would probably daunt an intellect less remarkable than mine. Having given the matter some thought, however, I have been able to devise a scheme of unparalleled subtlety and effectiveness. It became obvious to me that the British Empire is held together entirely by a series of contests of a game called crickets. Indeed, it is almost impossible to realize the extraordinary reverence with which this crickets is regarded, not only by what is called in the press the sporting fraternity, but by all classes, from the highest to the lowest. Am I not right, Ralph?
Yes.
So firm is the hold which this cricket has upon Englishmen of all classes that it has, in fact, become a synonym for virtue. Thus, an outraged husband, discovering his best friend in the embraces of his wife, will exclaim, "This behavior is not crickets, by Jove." An observation which would appear to be self-evident. And so you see, my friends, A blow struck at this national custom is a blow at the very heart of proud Albion.
No! No! I cannot be a party to this thing.
Rebellion, Ralph? Oh,
heaven knows I am not a pucker fellow. In fact, I am a really bad fellow. Mine has been a life full of shame. But there are limits beyond which even the worst fellow cannot go. Right. I was ready to join in the assassinating of the president of Gomelia and in blowing up the National Bank of Gloritania. But to interfere with a cricket match, and in particular, a test match, no. No, no, Professor, low as I have sunk, I am not as loathsome as that.
You disappoint me, Ralph.
No, no, no. No, please, don't.
Does he know how much he disappoints me, Carl?
Oh, I guess he does, judging by the way he's writhing on the floor.
Tell me, Ralph, no, how much you disappoint me.
Oh, well, must I remember? I'm most disappointed in you, Blessinger, my housemaster. Blessinger, you've brought a great disappointment to me as my headmaster. You disappointed me, son, my father. Oh, Rafe, what a disappointment you are, my mother. Oh, regard him as I'm you. Ralph, le disappointment. Such a runny mass order. Fetch for a legion. Ralph, el chasco. Ralph, el desillusion. Ralph. The disappointment.
Splendid. Now will you obey my orders?
I will obey your orders.
It is well, my friend. You shall have your complete instructions, both of you, within a few days. For the moment, I have no more to say. Good day, my old friends. It is indeed a pleasure to have revived these happy memories. I must go now and oil my engine.
So long, boss. Be seeing ya.
Meanwhile, back in the sleepy village of Waterclumdusis, love was still burgeoning.
Sometimes I'd meet her on the village green of an evening.
Church bells, ducks.
The church bells would be ringing and the ducks would be quacking on the pond.
Louder.
What?
Louder.
And the ducks would be quacking on the
no,
pond.
No, the ducks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know if it was just me, but the ducks always seemed to quack louder when Monica walked by.
Cheerio, you old ducks.
Good evening, Miss Monica.
Hello, old Joe. How are your dear peasant parents?
Well, very well, thank you, Miss Monica. Still wringing the bare living from the soil. Are you going to church?
Yes. I've been having tea at the manor.
The manor?
We've been talking about my donkey drop.
Your donkey drop? There's something I'd like to give you, Miss Monica.
A present for me?
Yeah. It's not much, I know. It's not like the presents a rich man could give you, but I'd like you to have it.
Oh, a cigarette card of you.
Yeah, that's my face.
With love from Prestwick J. Glebeshire. Thank you, Joe. Oh, it's top hole.
They're giving them away with packets of Red Queen. It's got the story of my life on the back.
I shall always value it. Only a week now until the team for the Oval is chosen. Oh, Joe, I hope you play.
Selection committee is above reproach.
Oh, of course. All the same, it would be wonderful.
Thank you, Miss Monica.
Won't you call me Monica?
May I?
Good night, old Joe.
Good night, Monica.
It was around that time that I started writing poetry.
He still does. Yeah. You've had some poems published, haven't you, Joe?
In the village paper, yes.